I'm just trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
The Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing that you do that as an insult.
You mean true for you is different from true for anybody else?
Yeah, come to absolutely,
you?
Because I can't think
either got to be true or not.
I can't, no.
Good evening, Oh Really Radio listeners. Welcome to show 99 for Friday, March 4th, 2016, where we dismantle the current events for your edutainment through mostly irrational conversations that make you go, oh, really? I'm your host, Andy Cowan, and my usual suspects are on assignment with life tasks and other duties. I believe even Stephen Griffith, our crack political journalist, is actually out at a Bernie Sanders polling location, well, not a polling location, one of those, one of their political offices is opening in the Orlando area, and he is going to be on site doing that. We've got a little bit of cleanup here. We actually got a review. We got a review last month, about mid-month, and it completely slipped through the cracks. So if you ever leave a review, and of course, why wouldn't you? Please do. Please drop us a line at oreallyradiopodcast@gmail.com and let us know that you did so that we can give you credit on the air. This review came in from Monkeroo, M-O-N-K-E-R-O-O, out on iTunes. They gave us a 5-star review. Andy has some good opinions and has some pretty cool co-hosts. Keep up to date on what they're doing. Great stuff. Thanks. It was a good review. Short, sweet, to the point. I like it. Thank you. I don't believe I have any errata that I have notes for from last previous shows, however long they happen to be. I am still working on getting the audio quality as good as I can get it, as is referenced in the chat room. That yes, we have had a little bit of issue getting things isolated just right. That's perfectly fine, perfectly normal as things go on here. But yes, I am all by myself this evening. You can see that on the video that will be archived out at youtube.com. We are currently broadcasting live on Twitch. So we have that going for us, which is very nice indeed. Feel like a real boy. I mean, a real broadcaster. It's great. So it'll be fun. It'll be fun. But yes, if you find anything that we screwed up, because we're humans, you know, we make mistakes, please go ahead. If you find one, pause the podcast, pause the video, or just, you know, let it stream in the background and send us an email at oreallyradiopodcast@gmail.com. That's OrellyRadio podcast, podcast, one word, at gmail.com. Or, of course, you can leave us a voicemail or text at 470-222-ORLY or 6759. Let's see. Ranty segments and headlines. Yeah, I got something. I got something. Okay. Now, I'm going to get a little personal here. A little personal. I'm a father of two sweet, adorable girls, ages 8 and soon to be 6. And the younger of the two, her name is Ella, and she has, some fairly, it's low grade asthma, basically. Some constricted airways, not terrible, but occasionally she needs a little help, and she is also on a maintenance inhaler. So she has two inhalers, an albuterol inhaler and also a Flovent. I'm not even sure what the chemical is. And she's been on those for a while. And the insurance that I had last year, which is the same company that I have this year through my employer, my day job, it's pretty decent insurance. I've been with them for many years, and I don't really have any complaints, but I also don't really have anything good to say other than they've been consistently whatever they are. In this case, ever since the Affordable Care Act has come into play, they have tried to cut as many corners as possible, and they have passed their savings onto their shareholders and put the burden back on us. So instead of having a standard straight copay of like $20 for a name brand or something this and something that or whatever, no. Now it is percentages. It is all percentages. If I go to the doctor, I don't know what I need to pay them because it's a percentage based on the total bill that gets presented back to Aetna. So I have no idea what I actually owe the doctor, and I cannot pay them at the time of service. I simply cannot because they don't know what to charge me. It's irritating, to say the least. Now we get to prescription care medicine. So at this point, I think it was 20% last year, and now it's 25% this year. So I have to pay 25% of any medication that is a name brand, you know, something that's not a non-generic. And non-generics in insurance parlance come in two flavors. There's the preferred and the non-preferred. The preferred is the ones that they've already cut a deal with that they get for, they get to, say, Flovent from the pharmacy. They said that it was $191. That's what the number that they gave to Aetna. Aetna looked through their record and said, well, we get Flovent for $145. And then they pass that on to me, and they say, well, you owe 25%, so your copay is this. But here's where it really reeks. Apparently, for name brand medicines of the preferred variety, it is 20% up to a certain maximum, but also there's a minimum that I have to pay. You'd think that minimum would be 25%, you know, if it's low enough. But unfortunately, no, that's not the case. No matter what it is, I have to pay $30 each if it's low enough. If it's high enough, I have to pay above that. So in this particular case, the copay, I have them right here. I actually have real physical sheets. The copay for the ProAir HFA MDI AER, which would be aerosol, 90 milligram, no, MCGs, sorry. That's the albuterol, was $30. Okay, that's fine. Then the Flovent HFA AER 44 MCGs inhalation. This is the maintenance inhaler, the one that's actually more therapeutic, which is quite good for her. It works. Copay is $39.94. So I'm above the minimum because this is the expensive one out of the two. And honestly, if it was right down to 25%, I probably wouldn't be paying the 30 on the ProAir, the albuterol one. But 30 is the minimum. So now, I understand all this. I do. You know, it makes sense. I'm actually in the healthcare industry in my day job, but I'm in the IT side. So, but I see a lot of this billing stuff happen, and it makes some sense, but it's still no fun. So with this, I also have to then, after two refills, they have to be filled in 90-day supplies from only two pharmacies. There, well, three, because you can do a mail order through them. Or there's one out to Target, and one out to CVS. So I could physically go to Target or CVS and get a 90-day supply, which in this case would be three inhalers of each variety. But it would also be that at three times the cost, all at once. So, you know, I'm all right. I can deal with this. You know, I make enough cash where I can make this happen. But there's a lot of people that aren't. There's an awful lot of people that cannot do this kind of thing. It makes it onerous, very difficult for them. And I look at this, and this is not the way things should be. And really, well, it makes me want more universal health care. Until I found a fellow podcaster who lives in Canada. She was talking about the healthcare up there, and prescription drugs and things like that. Just happened to be this. Things happen kind of cosmically all at the same time for no particular reason whatsoever. So in this particular case, she was saying what the insurance, the universal health care actually covers. So if you go to the hospital, everything the, you know, every, your entire stay at the hospital is covered, you know, end to end, soup to nuts, as it were. It's all there. No problems. It's all included in your taxes, essentially. Now, if you go to your primary care physician or just any doctor, you know, you go to a dentist or something, have a tooth pulled or something, and then he prescribes you a pain medicine or anything like that, the medicine that they prescribe outside of a hospital is not covered by universal health care. It's not. So even in Canada, at least this is according to my fellow podcaster friend, it is still something where you have to have an insurance plan to cover that that medicine. Now, we're not strangers to that here in the States either, because we have, you know, for the older generation, the people that, that are have to be on Medicaid or end up on Medicare, there is Medicare Part D, which is the prescription drug rider. And I just had a, today, I had a long conversation with my parents about what all that was about, what it all meant, because they are apparently forced under some penalty to have a prescription drug plan of some type, even though they're on Medicare. And it's all part of that Medicare Part D. Now, my parents are, they are in the Republican wheelhouse, very much anti, it's really funny. They're very anti the whole democratic socialist thing. Socialism in general is bad. Of course, they also grew up during, you know, McCarthy era, so that doesn't really surprise me. But with this in particular, he was going on and on about, you know, how they actually really love Medicare, which is, by the way, a completely socialist program. But it was the Medicare Part D part that he was having a problem with, because he was mandated to have it, because he's being forced to pay for it. Obviously, he's not so keen on that. Maybe that's more of a libertarian streak than a Republican streak. And I had to remind him that Medicare Part D was part of one of the Bush administration's grand ideas. And it did have wide acceptance, but it also had plenty of issues. It had the same kind of go-live issues that the Affordable Care Act did, but apparently that slipped everybody's mind when it was going through. But be that as it may, he has like a $15 prescription coverage plan that he has to pay that. And if he doesn't have it, then he is under some penalty. Like, he's not allowed to, even if they don't have any prescription drugs, he still has to pay it. And it's like, well, yeah, that kind of makes sense. And then I likened it to having a membership at BJ's or Costco or Sam's Club or any one of those big membership warehouses, where you'll get better deals for being a member, but those deals are only there. You have to buy a certain number of drugs before the membership cost makes sense. But really, they're old enough that they use this, the Part D, all the time. You know, no, he doesn't have 40 medicines that he has to take every day, but I know that he's on medicines for, well, too personal. I know he's on a lot of medications every month, and he's using the hell out of that plan. So he's buying at the big box store, at the warehouse club, and he's angry that he's being forced to do it, even though he's getting a benefit from it. I find this hilarious. And not the least bit sad. But, you know, it just proves that you need to understand all these things. And I wasn't, when I found the prices of my medicines here going up, I did not get mad at the pharmacist, because they are only looking at what they have. They don't make the rules. They don't make the laws of how much things are cost. Instead, they have to give what's available. And one thing that they did tell me, and this will end my diatribe, But it will lead directly into a couple of the stories. They do not have generics for these medicines. And it's like, okay, well, maybe I'll talk to the doctor and see if there was a generic. So I talked to the doctor, and, well, the doctor was unavailable, so I had to go someplace else for now. Okay. So then I contact the insurance company, and they drop the bomb on me that ever since, and this happened a while ago, if you ever had Primatene Mist or anything like that, then you know that that Primatene Mist went off the market because it had a CFC propellant in it, and that propellant had to be removed due to EPA regulations so that we don't destroy the ozone layer. Makes sense. You know, it's one of those things that we had to have. But because of that, all of the manufacturers of the drugs had to then reformulate their drug to have a non-CFC propellant, and thereby allowed them all to re-up their patents on the medicines. And now there are no generics available in anything that is an aerosol-driven, inhaler. There's no generics available at all. They simply don't exist. Not until the patents expire. And that's a bit of a problem. That is definitely a bit of a problem. So one of our folks out in the chat room says, Canada's healthcare system is not the best example of universal or single-payer healthcare. My daughter lives in Holland, and they have a much better plan. And I made it back. Ah, Stephen is in the chat room. Hey, Stephen. I'm set up right now to not have another co-host. I think I'm gonna hold off this week because I have a plan. But do chat in the chat room and tell us what you went through. See, tell us how it went. The result of what I'm going to do next should make callers and hangout guests and things, people that are not in studio, it will make their audio a much more palatable arrangement. But I have to get a capture card. I bought the wrong one this week, and I had to send it back. So I don't have that today. But it all worked out because I didn't have anybody else here ready at showtime. So this is where we are. Okay, so back to my little opening rant there on pharmaceuticals and the healthcare industry. Where was that? Yes, patents and copyrights and things like that. There was a story out here on Inverse.com about how Paramount must now explain Star Trek in a court of law or possibly lose ownership. Now, copyright is a big, huge, confusing thing, but it has to be well defined in order for somebody to protect it. So the gist of this is, since Star Trek is such an enormous property with vast arrays of fan fiction and movie series and multiple series, on the books, it is a universe in and of itself. It has actually become so large that you'd have a real hard time explaining it in a court of law to uphold a copyright, because it has actually become common parlance to the way we speak. A lot of things, beam me up, Scotty, that's okay. Is that copywritten? It very well may be, but it's a copyright that would be unenforceable, because just like how Kleenex is a copyrighted brand, it's also a generic term for a tissue that you blow your nose into. So it's interesting. So as the article says, Paramount is currently in court trying to stop the production of a fan-made, crowdfunded Star Trek prequel film on the grounds that it violates the studio's ownership of the copyright. Launched in 2014, the film Prelude to Axanar covers the missions of the first Federation warship and takes place during the childhood of James T. Kirk, but well away from him. The problem with all of that is that it definitely shares a universe with every Star Trek film and movie. The question becomes whether or not Star Trek is the universe or what happens within it. So, yeah, it's definitely a thing. And they're trying to claim Star Trek because they, you know, acquired the series from Lucille Ball's Desilu Productions in the late 1960s. Now they've been merged with CBS. And that's how we're getting both a new TV series and a continuing film franchise. But the XNR team has a card up its sleeve. The Paramount lawsuit claims that it infringes upon thousands of copyrights. And the XNR team has asked the simple question, which ones? Because Star Trek now exists over several different universes, time periods, and casts, it's not so simple. The universe is so spread out, it's almost impossible to define what Star Trek actually is. To that end, the burden is on Paramount to explain what Star Trek is in a legal sense. So in this case, the legalese of copyright is actually, it's kind of on the fan side. So we'll see exactly how that works out. And Steven says out in the chat room that XNR is amazing. Seen the little bits that they've put out. For some people that don't know, it's a fan-made movie that has a hell of a cast. And I had not heard about XNR. I've heard about, Renegades, and there's Starship Valiant and a few others. You know, this is not the first one by far, but apparently it's the one that's best funded. So it has the best chance of success. So we'll see exactly how that goes. We'll keep an eye on it. Should be good. So I'll jump back a little bit to On This Day in History so that we get on with the show, because I'm totally done with talking about healthcare. I didn't even want to call them, but I certainly had to. And I learned a lot. None of it any good, but I learned a lot. So trust your pharmacist. They're just doing their job. That's one thing. And always call the insurance company and see exactly what you have to do, because none of this was explained to me at the time of open enrollment. So maybe it changed. I don't know. It certainly changed from last year, and it's not for the good. So don't take for granted what you might already know. So, 'cause you don't, they change it all the time. That is within their rights to do. Okay. On this day in history, in 1789, government under the U.S. Constitution began. What a concept. In 1861, Lincoln was inaugurated. In 1933, FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, was inaugurated. And then he went on to a 12-year term and the 22nd Amendment limiting the office to two consecutive terms. Actually, Stephen, since you're out there in the chat room, could you look up and tell me whether or not it was limited to two terms, period, or limited to two consecutive terms, like there could be another president and then they could run again? Because I'm curious about that as I wrote it. In 1952, Ernest Hemingway finishes The Old Man and the Sea, which is an amazing piece of literature, right up there with Moby Dick. And sadly, in 1995, on this day, March 4th, John Candy passed away. Wah, wah, wah. Sad trombone, taps, all of those things. Now I've got two other stories, and then we'll get on with sciencey news and various other things. Here in Florida, I was unaware of this, but apparently, it is illegal to cohabitate. I didn't know this at all, but apparently that is being taken care of. So the thing that you've been doing probably the whole time anyway, because that's kind of what people do before they get married, is you live together. But that was apparently illegal. So in Tallahassee, shacking up together is one step closer to becoming legal in Florida. The Florida Senate voted 38-0, yay, Thursday, to repeal the unenforced prohibition on cohabitation. A man and a woman living together could be fined $500 and locked up in jail for 60 days, according to the law on the books since 1868. According to 2014 census data, there are nearly 438,000 unmarried male-female couples among 7.3 million Florida households. The bill, Senate Bill 498, seeks to repeal the entire statute covering married or unmarried men and women engaging in, quote, engaging in open behavior that is gross, lewdness, and lascivious. It now heads to the Florida House. If approved there, it would go to Governor Skeletor himself, Rick Scott. Florida, Michigan, Mississippi are the only states that still have laws on the books making cohabitation illegal. Of course, this is also completely unenforceable because, well, it's people. That's not going to happen. So, hey, that's at least some good news that some of those old laws are going bye-bye. And let's see, Stephen came back here. Here is the defining clause. Section 1, no person shall be elected to the office of the president more than twice. And if a person serves for at least 2 years of a term, it counts as a full term for the 22nd Amendment. And then he goes on to say, don't forget, it's also illegal to have sex with a porcupine in Florida, not to mention difficult and painful. Okay. And following that story is, apparently, there's now going to be, or at least there could be, a renter's tax break, just like how there's a tax break for owning your own home. Well, let's see. Yes, and this is also coming from Florida. Representative Alan Grayson, who is working hard to be one of Florida's next senators, actually replacing Marco Rubio, he says, there's an unequal treatment now of owners and renters. So, for example, the average taxpayer shelling out about $1,500 a month or $18,000 a year could potentially save $4,500 annually through the deduction if he or she is in the 25% tax bracket, he says. So, basically, if the bill becomes law, it would allow renters to deduct from their federal taxes what they pay for the primary roof over their heads, a proposal that could save, of course, thousands a year. This is a grand idea, and I've always kind of wondered, you know, why wouldn't you get that that ability? It put an undue burden on those that rent for whatever reason. And it goes right along with the, you know, if we follow the money, we can also follow the money to the poor. And it was just such a such a burden. It's really expensive to be poor. And that just shouldn't be the case. It really shouldn't. So, let's see. there's a prick joke in there somewhere. Okay. I got to read it. Okay, so let's see. There's a prick joke in there somewhere. Yes, of course there is, for having sex with a porcupine. And I just wanted to know what had to happen to get that law on the books in the first place. Yeah, about the porcupine? Yeah, not sure about that one. That's rough. Because the former ideology and the American dream. Okay, this is back on topic. Because the former ideology and the American dream was to not rent, but to buy a house. Well, yeah, that's true. And it certainly pushes us that way and pushes people into mortgages and things like that. But with so many people having poor credit and not being able to chase that American dream properly, or having proper equitable wages and a living wage and much less, you know, a wife and dog and 2.3 children or whatever it was. Yeah, it's just onerous. It always has been a little onerous, but it's suffered from the argument from antiquity. This has been the way it's been. It's always going to be this way. We've always done it this way. You know, tyranny of the default, as it were. Okay. So that was that, and now I get to go get a drink, and I'm going to let somebody else talk for a minute.
Are you annoyed by misinformation spreading like crazy, and you want to stop the flood of nonsense coming from all directions? Go to Wikipedia, as do all those millions out there. Did you know there's an edit button on all Wikipedia articles? Why don't you go and hit that button to start making the world's largest online encyclopedia a more reliable source of information? If you're specifically interested in skeptical topics, come and join us at Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia, an international endeavor to change the world for the better, word by word. There are many ways you can contribute. You just need to start. You speak several languages? All the more reason to join us. We provide training and all the help you need. If you want to make a change, there's a nice community waiting for you out there. Contact us at gsowteam@gmail.com, visit our website, that's gorillaskeptics.com, or check out the Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia Facebook page.
Okay, thank you very much, Andre, from the Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia project. I need to check in with them and see if they have any new intros for us, new promos. That would always be good. That one's just a public service announcement to support your local skepticism. Actually, just skepticism on the whole. That would be a really good thing. Okay. So, yes, in the chat room, again, we're broadcasting live on Twitch, and we have the Twitch chat room that's all built into the website, so you can see it at orellyradio.com, O-R-L-Y-R-A-D-I-O.com. It's right there on the page with the video and the chat right there, so whenever we're live, it will show up there. I do have it set to mature audiences, but that's only because occasionally we drop some colorful language, or we talk about things that are not necessarily good for little ears, because, well, I don't know what you want to teach your children. You know, I teach my children a lot of things, but what is good for the goose is not always good for the gander, as it were. So, parental discretion is advised. So, go ahead and hit that, and then you get to listen to the dulcet tones of my voice. And, yeah, so there's that. Okay, so we got some science news. This was phoned in from Michael. Let's see what we got here. We have an artist who, he's colorblind, for one. But he implanted a camera into the back of his head. Now, that's the funny thing about the way that our heads are oriented. We have our eyes up in front, but in the back of the head, back in on the back side of your skull, that's actually where your optic nerves terminate, back in the ocular center of your brain. Of course, I've completely butchered whatever that's called. Feel free and look it up. But basically, our vision centers are in the back of our head. So he has a camera actually implanted on the back of his head, and it goes in there. But what's funny is it doesn't actually work with his vision centers as much as it does his audio. So he actually hears colors. Whatever color the camera picks up, it actually sends an audio signal to him. So he was actually, apparently this is a, he was born with a particular type of color blindness, achromatopsia. Yeah, I've totally butchered that. Very sorry, dude. But it's a rare visual condition. So he's totally colorblind, can't see, you know, some people are red-green colorblind. No, he can't see it at all. So everything is just gray. What we would assume dogs would have, you know, various animals, but even according to some recent studies, they might see colors too. So, anywho, his head-mounted antenna is able to detect the wavelengths of light reflected off whatever the front of the sensor is pointed at, and then convert them into sound with different wavelengths corresponding to different sound frequencies. Guy was born in Belfast, raised in Catalan, and yeah, it's attached to his skull and delivers the sound to his inner ear through bone conduction. Oh, so it's not any brain thing. It's actually just more of a physical thing. Kind of neat. And there's a chart of how the colors are then translated into an audible sound, and he says that he can hear colors and he understands what all those colors now mean, and he says he had a TED talk in 2012, in the lecture, he said, quote, "It's very, very attractive to walk along a supermarket. It's like going to a nightclub. It's full of different melodies, especially the aisle with the cleaning products. It's just fabulous," he says. So that's pretty neat. He's been dubbed the world's first cyborg artist, and he sees himself as an early proponent of transhumanism. Now, transhumanism, at least, you know, I'm not sure exactly why Mike wanted to discuss this, but I want to talk about it because of the transhumanism. And that's a movement that explores the way technology can both physiologically and physically enhance human abilities. With the ultimate goal of transhumanism to shuffle off our meat suits entirely and move beyond that into something that is just better. So whatever that may be, better is just better. You know, could be robot bodies, could just be we're all uploaded to the internet. You know, so who knows? Who knows? But transhumanism is what that is called. You know, people that are very willing to shuffle off this mortal coil, but still hang around. So it's an interesting story. And of course you can find that in all of our notes, out at the webpage. This is of course show 99, and the show notes will be right there on the main page. And everything will be available after the fact. Of course, it's going to go out to iTunes and, various aggregators as time progresses. Okay, so let's see. There was another one. Apparently, groundbreaking immunotherapy discovery could lead to new cancer treatments. This is out on IFL Science, which I think you know what that means. And it was actually out in the journal Science as well. We could look there, but those are a little bit heavy-handed in their sciencing. So we're going to go ahead and just read what the story is here. But before I get into it, let me check the chat room and see what you guys had said. The idea isn't complete. No, that was about that. Mole Fanny says, "I think raptors are monochromatic colorblind." You know, I think raptors are extinct. Just kind of think about that for a second. I don't think they can see color either. I don't think they can see anything because they're dead. Okay, moving on. Okay, so current immunotherapy treatments attempt to harness a patient's immune system to in the fight against cancer. So that's what the whole immunotherapy is. But diseases often put up a very strong defense. Modern treatments are powerful but blunt weapons with serious possible side effects. And that's all very true. So basically, this is trying to get a mutation, looking at the way the cancer developed, to find a mutation of how it started and get the immune system to fight basically the core of how the cancer started. You know, not necessarily how it mutated, but to get it at the root. So as we have been using a software analysis to predict what sorts of mutations are present across the tumor. So we wondered whether we could get a look at it for antigens shared on all tumor cells. These antigens are the red flags needed for the immune system's T cells to signal the destruction of damaged cells. We had suspected, this is a McGranahan, we had suspected that the diversity of mutations we see in tumor evolution would be reflected by the antigens present on the cancer cells, but until now, we had no proof. And now they do. Their team found immune cells inside tumors that can recognize these early shared features. If these cells can be isolated and artificially multiplied in a lab, they could form a fearsome cancer-fighting force with the potential to target every cancer cell in the body. So that would be some really amazing stuff. Nice advance. And let's see. Eagles are raptors. Yeah, sure, they're raptors, but still. And I think they see, I don't think it's that they're colorblind. I think they actually see a wider range of into the infrared and possibly even into the ultraviolet spectrums. So they see just in a different way. Not necessarily colors. They see just better. And Stephen also says that naked mole rats are immune to cancer and can live healthy lives in toxic environments, which will kill a human. Well, they're immune to things that will kill a human, but there have also been, I think that is now a urban legend kind of thing. I believe that that naked mole rats actually can get cancer, but it's even more rare. If I only had a magic box with all of human knowledge on it. Let's see. Resistance to cancer, longevity. According to Wikipedia, which we love, of course, but is not the source of knowledge, but is a fantastic aggregator, naked mole rats have a high resistance to tumors, although it is likely that they are not entirely immune to related disorders. And so that is initial case reports of cancer in naked mole rats. That is a study in a 2016 paper, so it apparently just came out in Veterinary Pathology. Okay. Potential mechanisms that averts cancer is an overcrowding gene, which prevents cell division once individual cells come in contact, known as a contact inhibition. The cells in most mammals, including naked mole rats, undergo contact inhibition via the gene P27, which prevents cellular reproduction at a much higher cell density than P16 does. The combination of P16 and P27 in naked mole rat cells is a double barrier to uncontrolled cell proliferation and one of the hallmarks of cancer. So they are just very, very resistant to cancer, so much so that we think that they don't get it, but they do. It's just very rare. So there you go. Trying to be as scientifically accurate as possible here, and still be entertaining. So I'm going to move away from the cancer before I muddle it any further. You can follow those articles under our Science Bitches segment. And now, let's move on with the show.
Hi, O'Reilly Radio listeners. This is your host, Andy Cowan, calling my voicemail to make sure that it still works. Please consider calling us, 470-222-6759. Bye.
And now we're into the good news. This article also came from Michael, but instead of putting it in science, I wanted to put it under the good, because this is less science and more just good news for all of us. Again, out on IFL Science, Oregon becomes the first U.S. state to pass a law to phase out coal. This article just came out today. Oregon has become the first state in the U.S. to pass the legislation that will see it to phase out all coal. The state has committed itself to a complete ban on all coal generation, coal-generated energy by 2035, as well as obligating that at least half of the state's power come from renewable sources by 2040. The legislation was passed by Oregon State Assembly in that's a pretty good vote, a 38-20 vote, and will now need to be signed into law by Governor Kate Brown. Hopefully it does. Despite only actually having one coal-fired power station within the state, Oregon still gets a third of its energy from coal-fired plants in the states of Montana, Utah, and Wyoming. This means that if Oregon is to wean itself off the dirty fossil fuel, there could be a knock-on effect, as carbon emissions from those other states might also drop. The decision has the backing of two of Oregon's major energy producers, who will also be required to increase their share of renewables to 50% by 2040. This is just fantastic news, and hopefully it's going to be a hallmark of things that we're going to see around the country, but, we need to have people actually believe in things like science before that happens. So remember, go out and vote for people that know what the heck they're talking about. That would help tremendously. Okay? Thanks. That'd be great. Great. And let's see. That's really all I had to talk about in the good. Like I said, this is going to be a quicker episode because I don't have a lot of talking heads. It's basically going to be my opinion and what I get from the chat room. That's that. Also in the good, medical marijuana bill passes in Florida House 99-16, which is fantastic. That's great. And that is out on WESH News. Medical marijuana bill passes Florida House. So you can find that out at WESH, which is our Channel 2 NBC affiliate here in the Central Florida area. So that is a credible source. So, medical marijuana. So that passed the House. Now it has to go to the Senate. And then, of course, again, Skeletor has to sign it. And so far, he has been very reluctant to do so. But hopefully there's enough political inertia and pressure that will get him to actually act and in everyone's favor. Okay, so this week, our logical fallacy is ambiguity. You used a double meaning or ambiguity of language to mislead or misrepresent the truth. Politicians are often guilty of using ambiguity to mislead and will later point to how they were technically not outright lying if they came under scrutiny. The reason that it qualifies as a fallacy is that it is intrinsically misleading. For example, when the judge asked the defendant why he hadn't paid his parking fines, he said that he shouldn't have to pay them because the sign said, quote, fine for parking here. So he naturally presumed that it would be fine to park there. Ba-da-ba-ba-da-bum. Hey. Oi. And we're into the bad. And this one was pretty darn bad, but I didn't want to get into it too deeply, as there's so many other things. So I only have the one story here. But apparently, this is all about, you know, our immigration problem that, you know, we're getting immigrants from Syria and people that are fleeing the terrors that are ISIS in the world and other terrorist forces, say, down in South America and Central America. We do have a refugee problem. And in this particular case, a senior Justice Department official is arguing that one of these people, a 3- and 4-year-old, that they can learn immigration law well enough to represent themselves in court, staking out an unconventional position in a growing debate over whether immigrant children facing deportation are entitled to taxpayer-funded attorneys. Let me just let that sink in. This judge, a senior Justice Department official, I say, believes that a 3- and 4-year-old, 3- and 4-year-old, can learn immigration law and represent themselves in a case that will have them either staying or being deported back to their country of origin. That is so asinine and ludicrous. As I was saying earlier, I have 2 children. One is, 8. The other's going to be 6. And I will tell you right now, the 6-year-old is still learning how to read and write. She's not going to understand immigration law. This is the age of kindergarten. You know, 3- and 4-year-olds, that's preschool. That's, I still wear a diaper because I pee and poop myself. That is not somebody that is capable of representing themselves in a court of law. I do not understand this. So Jack H. Whale, a longtime immigration judge who is responsible for training other judges, made this assertion. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. This senior Justice Department official actually is an immigration judge. So either he thinks immigration law is as simple as one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish, or is an absolute idiot. He's made the assertion in sworn testimony in a deposition in federal court in Seattle. He comments, his comments highlighted the plight of thousands of juveniles who are forced to defend themselves each year in immigration court amid a surge of children from Central America who cross the southwestern border. Quote, I've taught immigration law literally to 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds, Wheel said. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of patience. They get it. It's not the most efficient, but it can be done. He repeated his claim twice in the deposition, also saying, I've told you, I have trained 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds in immigration law, according to a transcript. You can do a fair hearing. It's going to take you a lot of time. There are flames coming out of my ears. So, need a moment. I'm going to look over at the chat room and see what's going on over here in the chat room. Let's see. I would like to see this guy attempt to perform surgery on himself, as he's lived long enough, he should know how to do it, using his exact same logic. After all, he's had enough time to learn enough. Show me someone who isn't a several-year serving lawyer who can effectively argue immigration law. A 3- and 4-year-old immigration law. Now, is that simply an indictment that immigration law is easy? Because we know it's not. Is an indictment of that he's just a masterful teacher? That that the concepts as he presents them are so easy to understand that, well, we might as well say even a caveman could do it, you know, to harken back to that. I'm sorry, no, these people cannot, they can't read and write. And not only that, but there's a language barrier. Huge language barrier. Because they're coming from South America. They're too young even to write their names probably in their own country's language. You know, Spanish, Portuguese, who knows where they're exactly coming from. And yet they're expected to learn immigration law, which would then, of course, have to also be translated into their root language. Let's see, back in the chat room, this is Steven. I can teach a 3- or 4-year-old a lot. However, having them actually understand it and be able to creatively think about it to make a valid argument, I'd argue are well above their capabilities. I completely concur with my colleague. This guy needs to retire. Or, very much, he needs to go be a preschool teacher. I think he's found his calling. He needs to go work with small children and just teach them law. We'll have an entire crop of little tiny lawyers, which in and of itself is terrifying. Completely and utterly terrifying. Wheel's deposition came in a case in which the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, and immigrant rights group are seeking to require the government to provide appointed counsel for every indigent child who cannot afford a lawyer in immigration court proceedings. You know, I don't see that that's against our law, because if someone is arrested and they are given their Miranda rights, which, by the way, they have their Miranda rights, they have those rights before they are Mirandized, technically speaking, by the way. Miranda was just somebody that wasn't read those rights and then was able to claim this and blah, blah, blah. So now they're forced to Mirandize people by saying them. That's how things happen, you know, same as having to have that do not open during flight kind of sign on the windows of airplanes, that kind of thing. You have these rights, and one of those rights is if you cannot afford an attorney, one will be appointed to you. That's my understanding of it, so it's not like they're really going above and beyond. It's only because they're foreign nationals. That's why. But that doesn't mean that we need to give them a kangaroo court. That doesn't mean that, you know, we need to ship them off to Guantanamo and, you know, have like a military tribunal or something, and they don't have any rights under that. You know, they're still human beings, and not only that, but they're children. These are children. They are sent here because life is so terrible where they came from. So terrible that it was a better idea to send them on a dangerous trek alone into the unknown, into the hands of strangers. That was preferable to living in the conditions where they came from. They're very strong people. Anybody that can make it out of that is a very strong person, not to be underestimated. But I'm sorry, there are still limitations when you're wearing a diaper, when you're 3 and 4 years old, and you're just as likely to reach into your diaper and draw on the wall with poo as you are to sit and color with crayons. Same difference. Doesn't make any difference. If I continue on this route, I'm going to get far too upset to continue. So I'm going to pass on this one. Again, you can find this story. It was out on the Washington Post, and it's under our bad segment in the show notes. And now, as if that wasn't bad enough, now I'm going to scare you. We're going to go into the ugly. Now, this is all, of course, before I'm even talking about what happened with Super Tuesday. And we'll get to that as we can. But an expert, this guy, he dared some elite hackers to destroy his life. You know, it's under a controlled environment, and he was able to fix it. But I want you to watch this and listen to it, because it's really worth it, and just to know what you're up against. I think this is it, and if not, I will go find the link to the right one in just a moment. Let me see here.
Hackers are everywhere. From Ashley Madison to J.P. Morgan, from Jennifer Lawrence to the federal government, our biggest celebrities, corporations, and institutions have all been the targets of devastating cyber attacks. I wanted to see how bad a hack can be.
Yeah, this is the one.
So I invited a few of the world's best hackers to try to hack me and show me where my vulnerabilities are. And now I'm going to meet them in Las Vegas at DEF CON, biggest hacker convention of the year, and see what they found. This might not have been the best idea.
It really wasn't. Well, it wasn't the best idea in that he learned just how easy it was. This is rather long. It's 11 minutes, but really, it's worth those 11 minutes. You know, being a guy that works in IT, this is something you really ought to know.
The biggest hacker convention of the year. It's a place where thousands of hackers come to hear talks, to demonstrate their newest hacks. It's actually a place that's so dangerous to be on the internet that they tell you to turn off the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth on your phone, and they tell you not to use the ATMs too because those could be hacked as well. This is the DEF CON ballroom. This is sort of the main room where things are happening, and it's pretty wild. I think this is Car Hacking Village.
I was told it was quiet, so I turned it up.
Can you get me in? I'll unlock it for you.
Should be good.
Hacking is no longer like this fringe activity, and if you are at DEF CON, there's a good chance that you're here because you want to learn what could happen to you or your company.
Anyone here first time in the SECTF? Holy crap.
I invited Chris to hack me with his team, but they're going to hack me using social engineering, which is essentially hacking without any code. They just use a phone and an internet connection.
We help people with human security issues by testing vulnerabilities for like a network test, but it's for the people network. We test those vulnerabilities, see where the holes are, and then help people learn so they can patch them.
Can we try some of this? Can we try some,
yeah,
see, I mean, if it works?
Yeah, we probably could have our star visher here make some phone calls as
we're going. Let's do it.
Sure. Do you want to do a sample vishing call?
What's vishing?
Vishing is voice elicitation, and basically what you do is you use the phone to extract information or data points that can be used in a later attack.
Let's do it. Who are you going to call?
Maybe I'll call your cell phone provider.
Okay.
And see if I can get them to give me your email address.
I bet they're good. I bet they have my back. But yeah, go for it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to spoof from your number.
They got his back already.
Calling from you.
Okay.
Hi. I'm so sorry. Can you hear me okay? My baby. I'm sorry.
Okay. What she's doing.
My husband's like, we're about to.
For those that aren't watching the video.
And he's like, get this done by today. So
she has on YouTube.
I'll call you back.
a baby crying sound. And she's just acting like a flustered mother, an overworked mother, trying to do her best.
Can you help me?
Awesome. And
in just 30 seconds, Jessica,
they do
my personal email address.
Now, if I needed to add our older daughter on our account so she could call in and make changes, how would I need to go about doing that? You would have to send me a secure PIN through a text message?
Hey, folks, yeah. I'm going to let this play because now my youngest daughter
I'm not on
has shown up.
So I thought when we got married, he added me to the account. Okay, my
Jessica
name is
uses my girlfriend.
And I'm going to have to put her back to bed.
5127.
To set up her own personal access to my account.
This
wait,
is Ella.
So there's no password on my account right now. Can I set that up?
She even gets the support person to change my password.
Thank you so much for your help today.
So she just basically blocked me out of my own account.
Say hi.
I'll get her fed after this.
There you go.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Holy shit.
Bed?
So they just gave you
be right back, everyone.
Access to my entire cell phone account.
You're going to have to go on and change your password now because it's Jess, my name.
And all it took was a crying baby and a phone call.
Yes.
I really thought that my cell phone company would protect me. I mean, like, this is the most basic stuff, and they're not doing it. And if they're not doing it, you know all these other businesses aren't doing it either.
Anyone with a phone and an internet connection can do social engineering. But I was curious, what can a hacker with serious coding skills do?
Well, DEF CON is the world's biggest hacking convention. It's hacking everything. Hacking social, hacking hardware, hacking software, hacking various systems.
I asked Dan Tentler, a well-known security researcher, to turn all of his firepower on me.
I did get into quite a number of things that I found.
So what were the first things you did? How did you start hacking me?
I quickly found your Squarespace blog and had an idea. Basically what I did was created a bogus Squarespace site and sent an email to you, a fish asking you to go to this website, run this certificate installer.
And I did it because I'm an idiot.
So once you ran that, it gave me access to your computer and I created several fake pop-ups that looked like system pop-ups. That would ask you for your credentials.
You didn't even have to have my passwords.
No, you gave them to me.
I gave them to you.
Yeah. So I stole your 1Password keychain.
And 1Password is where I store all my other passwords. So effectively by...
And your social security number and your Amex stuff and all your stock trading and bank information. I can send email to everyone in this room as you. I am you right now, if I wanted to be. If my evilness is working correctly, it should actually be... taking pictures of your desktop and pictures through your webcam every 2 minutes. And I have been watching you for about 2 days now. In coffee shops, at your mom's house, on a plane. Here's you editing stuff. There's you like.
Oh my God,
nervous.
So this is literally.
Every 2 minutes.
Through my webcam.
Yeah, through this guy.
How badly could you have messed up my life?
I could have made you homeless. I could have made you homeless and penniless.
How? How would you make me homeless?
Like, I have control of your digital life in its entirety. I have all your credentials, I have all your access to all your financial information, all your work information, all your personal information. I can pay people with your bank account or your Amex account. I am you. I can fully impersonate, like the only thing I couldn't doctor would be like your fingerprints.
So there you go. I think that actually is a pretty decent place to stop. The look on this guy's face is sad. We still have another like 5 minutes through this. I'm glad that my daughter decided to come in while I was doing this kind of segment, so I could take care of her. But yeah, the hacking is so there, so easy. There was one thing that in particular needs to be mentioned, and that was how it was a friend of mine brought this to my attention, and it was, do you worry about getting attacked in the streets by martial arts experts? You know they're there, but you don't worry about it. You know, it's the same way with the elite hackers, the people that have these massive skills that can destroy your life, can destroy everything with just a little bit of work. This was effortless for these people. They really did very little. You know, the one that did go through and had him prompt, you know, the second guy there, that was harder because he actually had to have programs in place to do so. And he also had things that that would then that would then pull the web shots and the screen and things like that. Yeah, all that was there. So yeah, rough. Very, very rough. So that's definitely not something to trifle with at all, ever. But yeah, it's one of those things that that exists that you should know about. There's really, at the end of the day, if somebody wants to get you, they're going to get you. Don't worry about that. But that doesn't mean just be loose and carefree about it and just plaster your information everywhere. Be careful. Avoid those phishing attacks. Try two-factor authentication where you can. A lot of it is just the inertia of being complacent and wanting things to be easy. You know, there's a lot of things that we do for convenience. You know, the prices are always more expensive at the convenience store, right? Yeah, you're paying for the convenience. Same way at home with security, you know, defaults hardly ever get changed. Most of the time, if you just change the defaults, you're going to be good. On your computer, don't run as an administrator, run as a normal user. Then if you want to escalate your privileges, you can. You know, be aware of the way things are and that not everyone has your best interest at heart. Just try to protect yourself. Try to be wise to things. Don't randomly click things. Clicking things in email is always bad. That's another phishing attack that doesn't involve crying babies most of the time. But it does exist. And Stephen in the chat room says, most people don't have a security positive mindset. Just a bit of security consciousness will kill most phishing attempts. And it's absolutely true. Don't click those links. You know, those links alone, by the act of clicking it, you have given your system permission to activate the program that is contained in it. Some of those links, though they may look like a normal hyperlink, they might actually be something like JavaScript. And JavaScript will run outside of your browser in your computer and execute all sorts of things. And that will, and that it's game over at that point. And then you have to call somebody like me to come in and fix your computer and fix your life and put things back on track and let you know where you've gone horribly wrong. And there are times that the hackers are just better and it's done. You know, then you're going to be working back from zero. Now, what's amazing, there's lots of security podcasts out there. The best one that I would recommend getting into is Security Now with Steve Gibson over at the Twit Network. That's a great one. You know, he'll guide you through a lot of this stuff. And even the things that are in the Wayback Machine from when they started, like 10 years ago. You know, it's ridiculous. They're still valid because the technology underlying the underpinnings of the internet are the same. Same stuff. So with all that, you can learn an awful lot and just naturally protect yourself against certain things. It's like you know better than to click things that come into email. You don't click on attachments. You don't click on things that you didn't go out looking for yourself. You know that address bars can be spoofed. You know that these things are possible just by being, you know, an aware netizen. And since all of you are citizens of Netlandia, I trust that you know what the heck you're talking about. At least I hope that you know what you're talking about. Steven says, if you're ever unsure, check with the company that it says it's coming from. Yeah, don't click on the link because it could take you to a manufactured login page where you'll then put in your right information and then it'll tell you you're wrong, but then they've got your right information. And then it's game over because then they'll log in as you, and then, oh, look, you know, then you end up like this guy. Now, of course, he had these people do it, and, you know, he ended up being okay. But yeah, it was all about just being aware, you know. Now that you know what can happen, now you can naturally protect yourself better. You know, it's less the boogeyman, and it's just the way life is. So, okay, I think that that about wraps up what I had prepared for the show notes, and now it's on to the election cycle. what to say about the election cycle? So, let's see, I did a quick search of Super Tuesday results. In the news recently, as in just today, Dr. Sleepy, Dr. Ben Carson, former neurosurgeon at Johns Hopkins University, has finally suspended his campaign, so he is out. So that leaves four. That leaves Trump in the lead, Ted Cruz in second, Marco Rubio in third, and Ohio Governor John Kasich in a distant fourth. Sadly, in a distant fourth, because he's the only one that actually makes sense when he speaks on stage. He has, you know, he has some good things to say. He also has some bad things to say, but of the lesser of evils, you have Kasich. Unfortunately, he's also the one not getting the votes, which is also a sad commentary for the Republican Party. Donald Trump currently has 329 delegates. Cruz has 231. Marco Rubio has 110. Kasich has 28. And Carson was trailing the pack in fifth with 8. For the Republican nomination, you need 1,273. There are still 1,762 available. We're still in a long race, but this is definitely indicative that Trump he's still got that momentum. He's still got the momentum. Though things can change. Things can change on both sides. And now, for the big changes, let's go over to the Democrats. And we are down, of course, only to two. We are still with former Secretary of State and New York Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, and the junior senator from Vermont, independent, and now running as a Democrat, Bernie Sanders, feeling the burn, Bernie Sanders. Now, Hillary, if we count only the... this particular page is not going to show me at all. They have combined the superdelegates and the delegates together, which is a monumental sum. Combined the pledged superdelegates, which have not voted yet, so they could still jump ship. They have a combined 1,066 in favor of Hillary. And combined, they have a 432 for Bernie Sanders. Now, Bernie's... let me see if I can pull this up over on the other page here so that you guys can see it. See what I'm actually looking at. There we go. And let me see if I can then embiggen it for you. Okay. Yeah, that works. Okay. Now, the chart that we show here has light blue as being the pledged delegates, which are the ones that they've won, and the dark blue being the superdelegates, which they have only been promised. So, yeah, Bernie hasn't gotten a whole lot of pledged superdelegates. Of course. Stephen put a link out. Vox, let me see if I can actually get to it. Oh, good. That link worked. Let me see. Is it coming up there? No, of course not. Because that's not the window I was sharing. I'll share it here. Paste and go. There we go. Presidential Primaries Delegate Tracker 2016, courtesy of Vox, and of course, courtesy of Stephen. Thank you very much. Okay, so... let's see, Trump is 27.2% of the way to the nomination, and Hillary is 24.2%. Really? Huh. Boy, that's kind of scary, actually. Okay, Without the superdelegates, Hillary has 577 and Bernie has 394. So really, they're 8% different. Not even 10%, so single-digit percentages away from each other, which is what we've seen in most of the states that they've run against each other, that it has been a very close race in many cases. There was a bit of a kerfuffle in the state of Massachusetts where Bill Clinton basically shut down a polling center when he came in with a megaphone and basically prevented people from going in while he stumped for his wife, which is illegal, I might add. Haven't heard a whole lot about that. I don't know if anything's come from that. Should be interesting. Let's see. Hillary has won in pretty much every single state she won in during the 2008 race. That's true. However, she's also been winning in states where she has no hope to win in the general election. Has she been? Oh, you mean because the state is going to go to the Republicans. Yeah, that's true. She has been, that has been pointed out. I've noticed that in many conversations that the historically red states are also you know, she's doing really well there, which kind of points to her possibly GOP, you know, tendencies. Also, this big. Also, with three of the big states left, New York, Florida, and California, with California alone, Bernie could surpass her. That's right, because California has a lot of delegate count. Let me see if I can. Where is it? No, that's not it. I'll have to look for that, because there's a there it is, green papers. Let me see. California. General election, national conventions. Where is it? CA. When does California go? That's not it. I have little text that I'm looking at. So we're down through March. When is California? Okay, Florida goes on March 15th, along with Illinois and Montana, Mississippi, North Carolina, and Ohio. Why am I not seeing California? Silly web pages. Anyway, so I don't want to I don't want to bore everyone with this. It's, though elections can be quite boring. Tuesday, June 16th, I guess. Okay. 547. Thank you, Stephen. I really should have probably Skyped you in, but the audio issues with that were just going to be too terrible. So 546 are going to come in from California alone, and that's going to be on Tuesday, June 16th. So we're definitely going to be watching that one. That should be a lot of fun. Very entertaining, I'm sure. You know what? I was really looking at the wrong thing, because I had another source available. Pity. I'm so unprepared, apparently. Well, doesn't really matter. I wasn't exactly sure what I was going to say about Super Tuesday, other than I was kind of underwhelmed. It played out very much the way I thought it was going to, and the way everyone else thought it was going to. Bernie did better, I believe, than most thought that he was going to. He did take several states, and he's maintained. He's basically maintained his pole position. So it's going to. She has not pulled out in the front. The only reason that she is so far in the front is because of those superdelegates. And one thing about the superdelegates, we may remember someone called Nancy Pelosi. And Nancy Pelosi came out against superdelegates recently. Nancy Pelosi. Yes, there it is. just dropped a presidential campaign bombshell, comes out against superdelegates. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi. Yeah, we know who she is. I'm not a believer in the sway of superdelegates deciding who is going to be the nominee. I think we have a democratic process where people vote on both sides of the aisle, and that should be determined, and that should determine who the nominee is. Yeah, I'm amazed that she said it. It's definitely not exactly the same party line that everyone else has. It throws away a measure of control to avoid people, you know, grassroots candidates like, I don't know, Bernie Sanders, who is specifically not who the Democratic National Convention Committee wants in there because they can't control them. It's all about control. You know, he's not beholden to them. Again, I am suffering a little bit of election fatigue because I hear a lot of the same stuff over and over and over and over. And being as involved in it, that fatigue is amplified because I also know that I have to go back to it to keep everyone informed. I feel that is a duty that I have to the listeners. You know, yes, you're going to hear a lot of other things. We're not just going to talk about this, but yeah, we're going to talk about it a lot because it's really, really super important. And there's new things that come up all the time. So I'm not at least going to have the same rhetoric, the same talking points that Bernie has. Bernie has really fatigued me out with the same talking point the whole time. His consistency is great. It's very key. And for a politician to always be consistent and on point is amazingly important. I can't understate that at all. But it's really rough on those that are paying attention because we've just heard all this before. It's a broken record. It's a song that's been overplayed on the radio. It's like, do you have any other tracks? It's a little, it's boring, really. It's boring. But keep tuning in here because we'll let you know when things change because we'll go ahead and keep looking at it. Let's see. Stephen also said, also several superdelegates like Alan Grayson had polls to ask. Several did? I only knew about Alan's. Had polls to ask people who they should vote for and others pledging to go with the majority of their state. So hopefully that is a movement that catches on. And I really feel that if people show up at the polls and really express their opinions, and by the way, where we thought that we were really having a big turnout, that big turnout ended up being largely Republican, largely GOP at the polling centers, which was surprising in that it's not the same story that we hear other places. So I'm not sure that those numbers are even reliable. I'm not sure where all these stories are coming from. It's questionable, is what I'd say. But again, it's also one of those things that we're probably never actually going to know the real answer to, so we have to let it go. We just have to let it go. Yeah, but I would like to know what other delegates made that decision to go. But if enough people show up and express their opinion and actually show an overwhelming support, at some point there's just going to be that pressure to push on and go with the rest of the delegates. Because if you don't, then you're going to cause a bit of an outrage. You're going to be on the evening news. It's going to be such a big story that they won't be able to sweep it under the rug. And yeah, they're apt to sweep a lot of things under the rug. But there are some things, like Bernie bringing in millions of dollars and maintaining a position and things like that. He's gotten in the news an awful lot more recently. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's still one of those things that we ought to, you know, keep the popcorn popping. And speaking of popcorn popping, there was recently also a Republican debate. Oy, that was interesting. Kasich apparently was, still, I have not watched it, but the reports that I have gotten myself, Kasich was maintaining his adultness, being the voice of reason on the stage, and Marco Rubio, I believe, insulted Trump in some way about his hands being small or stubby or something like that. And Trump felt the need to express that his hands were, in fact, of normal size and stature. And in fact, and then basically in doing so, in no uncertain terms, defended the size of his own manhood on stage at a presidential debate. I have few words. I really have few words. However, there was the other people have come up with words that are very good as well. And let me see if I can dig up those words. And let's see. Trump. George Takei. He had just recently tweeted something about Donald Trump. Let me see if I can find his TED Talk. No. Where is it? You go out to his Facebook. Okay, Facebook. He apparently just went to the dictionary and mentioned, you know, what Donald Trump's name meant in, let's see, where is it? Boy, he tweets a lot. He works a lot in there. I'm not sure I'm going to find it. But somebody, just looking up Trump, let's see, define Trump. This is going away here. Verb. Okay, it's all in cards. Let's go out to Merriam-Webster. Sound of a trumpeting sound. A decisive overriding factor or final resource, dependable. That's not what he found. To do better. Well, apparently, Trump has several meanings, and some of them are not so flattering. So, I will leave that to your imaginations. I don't necessarily want to attack his character. But he makes it so darn easy, as he attacks everyone else's character as well. I don't know what to say about that. Okay. But that really does it for the show. Super Tuesday did happen, and of course we're going to have more wonderful things coming out again, and oh yes, of course, there's always Make Donald Drumpf again, because apparently his family changed the name, the surname from Drumpf, D-R-U-M-P-F, to Trump, because it, I guess, sounded better than Drumpf, and well, yes, it does, in fact, sound better than Drumpf. So yes, there's John Oliver with Last Week Tonight had the campaign Make Donald Trump Again, and then he won Super Tuesday pretty handily. So yeah, people are they're really really good at getting people to vote against their own best interest. Don't know what to say about that. The South is essentially lost, and always going to be a bastion of the red team. So the blue team, which would be, you know, Hillary and Bernie, they don't really need to worry about it that much. Hillary did very well here, which I believe is telling all in of itself. Some of the people that I follow and I consider friends and colleagues and associates out on Facebook and social media land, those of the more African-American black persuasion, they are definitely in the Hillary camp, in spite of many cultural leaders getting behind Bernie Sanders and, you know, ignoring some of the things that he says. And it's what was the rhetoric? It was basically that Hillary and Bill pandered to them more. They basically had to be in the neighborhood to truly understand the black experience or something. Now, I don't want to be dismissive of that because, yes, it's true that that is important. But at the same time, it's also prohibitively difficult to do because all of the black communities that I'm aware of are typically very insular and they have, you know, it's a very neighborhood-centric thing. And to be able to canvass all the neighborhoods properly is very difficult. And Bernie being an outsider, which is the whole basis for his campaign, has had to focus on areas where they are strategically important and he will win. So no, he did not seek the black vote as heartily as Hillary had in those states, because those states aren't going to vote for him. They aren't going to be a win for him in the general election anyway. They were going to be lost. So it's a matter of economy. You know, where are you going to spend your resources? And since he has less resources than Hillary does, he does not have people that can go out and canvass quite as much as she does because she has a bigger war chest because she's taking the money from larger campaign donors. He has to spend more efficiently. He has to be more efficient with his campaign. Out in the chat room, I knew this was going to bring some things up. I'll try to write a more in-depth article on voting against interest in the near future. Thank you, Stephen. Also, Hillary and Bill did things that were guaranteed to make them visible. While they were being helpful, they were also making sure they were being seen. Bernie was, in fact, working just as hard, if not harder, but wasn't caring as much about visibility when it comes to things they've done for the black community, at least. And yeah, that's what I've seen as well. He's been a civil rights champion for his entire political history and a little bit before he got into politics. You know, his entire adult life has been spent in that vein. And I find it both saddening and maddening that the black community would be so dismissive of someone that has always had their better interest in mind. But apparently they aren't being glad-handed enough. And I find it sad. But as I left a particular conversation, I'll say, I'm disappointed. I'm dismayed. And I will remember what you said. And I will remember what the black vote in these communities requires in order to get. I don't have to like it. You know, we can agree to disagree on those things. But regardless of what I say, of the front runners, Trump and Cruz and Rubio, I wish Kasich was doing better. He's simply too far behind. You know, even if he would have to somehow walk on water with an AK-47, you know, that kind of thing, in order to gain the rest of the delegates that he would need. He's so far behind the others that I don't think he has the momentum to keep up. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple primary cycles here that he drops off the radar and suspends his own campaign. And then we're going to have three terrible people, none of whom are prepared or equipped to do the job properly. So, if we're choosing between the three Republicans, or the two Republicans and an independent on that side, and the Democratic Socialist and the Goldwater Democrat, which is a weird thing to say, both of them, the blue team, is simply going to do a better job. Whether it be Hillary because she has more experience than all the people on the GOP side combined, or it be Bernie Sanders, who has a vision and a plan that will make things work and has a better interest for the common man in America, either one of them is still a better choice. So as much as I would prefer it to be Bernie, I will still vote for Hillary because the alternative is terror and fascism and a theocratic majority. And as coming from a secular humanist atheist, that is not a place I want to be. Not a place at all. We've seen that happen, and it was not pretty. We do not want that to happen. Let's see, Stephen, in the chat room, when it comes to things like... I would love for the GOP to nominate Hillary as their candidate, as she is the perfect old-school Republican candidate, and have them do it just so they don't have to deal with Trump. That would be an interesting thing. And it was mentioned. In fact, I think I've got that out on my wall. Let me grab that article real quick. The thing about in the debate, Tennessee presidential primary winner defends penis size, promises war crimes. That was the that was the headline from the NashvilleScene.com, which is a paper out there. Pretty amazing stuff, really. Let's see, where be it? Oh, maybe I'm going to miss it. I may miss it. I hate to do that to everybody, so I'm not going to have it. With that, I think I'm going to let it rest. That's going to do it for the show. Now I remember. My brain is kicking back into gear. The deal with having a brokered convention may not necessarily be the case, but if for some reason, and we've seen it a little bit with the way that the votes have been running, if the candidates all essentially come in a dead heat, and there is not a strong enough candidate to win handily the number of delegates necessary to win the convention, then it goes into a brokered conference anyway. And at that point, then the RNC, or the DNC at the same token, if there were three running anymore, they would then have the ability to change who they pick. They wouldn't even have to pick somebody that's on the primary ballot. They could pick somebody completely different, like Paul Ryan. And that's also fairly terrifying. But strangely, Paul Ryan does seem like a better choice than the three. If we're picking our poison, there we go. So I don't know what to say more about that. It's ugly, 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 ugly. So let's keep that in mind, and we'll keep track of those things as they unfold. Next week is our 100th episode. Oh my God, we've done this 100 times, and I trust that things have gotten better overall as we've continued on. I certainly hope so. I'm doing as much as I can here behind the scenes to produce a better and better product every week. I hope that's happening for everyone and that you enjoy the show. If you do enjoy the show, please let us know. Leave us a favorable review elsewhere. And also for the 100th show, if you've watched a lot of shows in the past, drop me a line and let me know what you liked in what show, in what segment, describe it a little bit. And I may do like a little bit of a best of, and we can revisit it and then talk about it and see if our opinions have changed at all, or if something is different there. Just, it's going to be a little bit of a congratulations, a little victory lap for us, just because that's the way it ought to be. 100 is a big milestone, and thank you for being here for it. And with that, I think, that's going to wrap. There we go. All right, that's it for us tonight. We'll be back next Friday, about 9:30 p.m. Eastern, or if you want to start off in the in the chat room and watch the pre-show, definitely come on out and join us for the pre-show roll. The conversation should continue on the web, though. We got a whole week going on here. Head over to orellyradio.com. That's O-R-L-Y-R-A-D-I-O for all the links right at the top of the page, and do watch us live and chat in the chat room if you can. And if you've liked what we've done here, you know, you can help us. You can help us with financially. You can help us by following the donate tab or the Patreon link on the webpage, and that will take you over to patreon.com/Cowen, C-O-W-E-N, that would be me. And, yeah, follow that donate button and you can donate directly to us, and everything goes directly to the show and show production costs. If that's too rich for you, we still completely understand. Please contribute to the show with topic ideas, corrections, advertising offers, unclaimed lottery tickets, hate mail, unsolicited advice, whatever you have, by emailing them to us at orellyradiopodcast@gmail.com. That's O-R-L-Y-R-A-D-I-O-P-O-D-C-A-S-T @gmail.com. Also, leave us a voicemail or a text over at 470-222-6759. And also, we do have a subreddit, but I think I'm going to retire it. So just send all of your story ideas, just send them right over to our email at Orellyradio Podcast. Maybe put like a topic idea in the subject line so I don't spam filter them away. And also, hey, leave us a review. That's really important. Leave us a review on wherever you found us, if you can. I know that some platforms don't do that sort of thing, which is irritating. But hey, you know, we're out there on iTunes, and that really helps the visibility of the show. And of course, what would really, really super duper help is if you simply shared the show with a friend. Let them know. Let them know that we're doing a show, and that that there's some good good stories being presented, and you get a little entertainment value out of it. Of course, also we got a Facebook, we got a Twitter, a Tumblr, a Google Plus, and a YouTube's, and a Twitch, and all sorts of things, and they're all right there at the top of the page. And do follow all of those, and subscribe, and like, and the follow, and the circles, and all that, so that you never miss a story. Also, we can't thank you enough for spending some time with us. Time with me. So until next time, this has been Orellyo Radio, part of the Cowen Services Network. Music for the show was created by Kevin McLeod of Incomptech.com. Thanks, everybody. And the broadcast has been successfully terminated.
It's in the can.
Yeah, that's it.